Speaking of radio, the Jack Benny program.
One night after rehearsal, some man who was there came up to Jack and said, "Mr. Benny, I think the two jokes on page 6, and he showed them to him, he said, "I think these should be cut." And Jack says, well, why? He says, "Because they're not funny." And Jack says, "Wait a minute." He says, "Don't you ever say that those jokes or any other jokes are not funny. You say you think they aren't funny." And the fella says, "Well, okay, I think they're not funny." Jack says, "Now that's fine, I'll buy that. But," he says, "unfortunately for you," he says, "my writers and I think they are funny, and they're going to stay in." And they stayed in, and they both got big laughs.
Ladies and gentlemen, a radio program is only as funny as the writers make it. And I happen to be fortunate enough to have four of the greatest, most talented, most original, most versatile writers in the entire industry. Mary, introduce my writers.
Why don't you introduce them?
Every time I look at them, I get sick. All right, I'll do it. My writers are Sam Perrin, Mill Josephsburg, George Balzer, and John Tackerberry. Sam, I understand you're going to spend your vacation at the Flamingo Hotel in Las Vegas.
Yes, and thanks for mentioning it. Now I won't have to pay.
And George, you're going to spend your vacation at the Del Mar Hotel in Del Mar.
Thanks for mentioning it, Jack. Now I won't have to pay.
And Tack, you're going to spend your vacation at the Shamrock Hotel in Houston.
Thanks for mentioning it, Jack. Now I won't have to pay.
And Milt, you're going to spend your vacation at your brother's house in Brooklyn.
Thanks for mentioning it, Jack, but he's still going to charge me.
Hey, Milt, he has to. I own the house.
The head writer, the head writer was Jack himself, even though he didn't actually do much writing. He was the one who really controlled what he wanted to do.
Writer George Balzer.
All right, let me give you a little rundown of what maybe a typical week would be like. We'd finish our show on Sunday, and about 90% of the time, and maybe even more, we would not know what we were going to do the following Sunday. And Monday, we would just forget about the show entirely, or as much as we could. It's always in the back of your mind. And on Tuesday, we would get together, either physically get together or by phone, and discuss a few possible ideas and so forth, and then have a conversation or two with Jack. And when a basic idea, not necessarily in great detail, was laid out, that would be Tuesday. Then on Wednesday and Thursday, the two teams would split up, and Sam and I would write one half of the show, and Milton Tack would write the other half. And during those 2 days, we would keep in touch by phone, merely to have a blend when we wanted to put the two spots together. Why, we would call them, or they would call us and say, "How did you finish your part?" And we would say, or they would say, and then we would pick up from that exact line and just put the script together and get it over to the script girl, who would type up five or six copies. And that'd be Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. Then on Friday, we would meet with Jack at his house in Beverly Hills. And we would start right at the top. And we would go page after page, fixing, cutting, strengthening, so forth and so on. And after maybe 3-4 hours work, why, that would be our finished script. That's Friday. And Saturday, we'd go to NBC for a rehearsal. Entire cast would be there. And we'd have a reading around a table. And then after the reading, everyone would be dismissed except Jack and the writers and the script girl. Then we'd go in one of the rooms there at the studio. And we would work the script over again. By that time, we knew whether we were 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes over or whatever had to be cut. And after a couple of hours, why, that was the finished script. And we then would be ready for a Sunday morning rehearsal. And we would have a reading around the table again for any of the new material. And then we'd go on mic, rehearse. Then we'd have a break and come back and do the show. And then Sunday evening, we were right back where we were a week before, not knowing what we were going to do for the next week.
You make it sound so simple.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's go back to last night and out to Jack Benny's house, where the whole gang has gathered for rehearsal. Rochester, has everybody arrived for rehearsal?
Yes, sir. They're all in the library.
Good. Well, I'm ready.
Yes, sir. Mr. Jack Benny, everybody rise. The first rehearsal of the 26th program of the Lucky Strike series is now in session.
Good evening, Miss Livingston.
Good evening, Mr. Benny.
Good evening, Mr. Wilson.
Good evening, Mr. Benny.
Good evening, Mr. Harris.
Good evening, Mr. Benny.
Gee, what's happened since I went away?
Another outburst like that, and I'll have the room cleared. Now, raise your right hands and repeat after me. Mr. Harris, it's your other hand. Now, repeat after me. I do solemnly swear...
I do solemnly swear...
...that I will not divulge or repeat...
...that I will not divulge or repeat...
...any routines, ideas, or jokes herein contained...
...any routines, ideas, or jokes herein contained...
...and if I do, may I be farmed out till life can be beautiful.
And if I do, may I be farmed out till life can be beautiful.
You may all be seated. Rehearsal is now in session. And now, to facilitate the reading of the script, will everybody please remove their paper clips? Good. Rochester, collect them, count them, and straighten the bent ones.
Yes, sir.
We will now commence the rehearsal with the opening introduction by Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wilson, if you please.
Thank you.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Benny.
Just a moment, Mr. Wilson. What is it, Mr. Harris?
Well, I'd like to propose an amendment to joke 4 on page 6.
Why?
Because it stinks.
I see. Mr. Harris has expressed an opinion that joke 4 on page 6 has an aromatic quality which is not pleasant. We will take a vote. Miss Livingston?
I agree.
Mr. Wilson?
I agree.
Mr. Dave?
I can't tell. I have a cold.
Motion passed. And now we will proceed...
Jack, for heaven's sake, this is silly.
What?
Why do we have to go through this every time we have a rehearsal? Why can't we rehearse like we used to?
Because everybody took advantage of it. You come in late, you wouldn't pay attention, you sat around reading newspapers instead of scripts. That's why.
But, Jack, you can't rehearse this way. You've got to loosen up. After all, this is a comedy program.
Ooh, what she said.
Dennis.
Well, Libby's right, Jackson. We can't be funny when we're so formal and stiff.
Phil, you're the only one that comes in stiff. That's why we're rehearsing this way. Remember, I'm the star.
I'm the star.
Quiet, Polly.
Quiet, Polly.
Polly, if you don't keep quiet, I'm going to... You know what?
Oh, Jack, not again.
What does he do, Libby?
Every time the Polly talks back to him, he takes her out of the cage, opens the front door, and hands her a road map to Capistrano.
Mary.
That's the only parrot registered with the automobile club.
Never mind, let's get started with the rehearsal. Now, here's the way the show will run. We'll do our usual opening spot, a band number, and then Dennis's songs...
Sandwiches, hard-boiled eggs, and Coca-Cola. Get your sandwiches, hard-boiled eggs, and Coca-Cola here.
Oh, yes.
I'll have a roast beef.
Here you are. Thank you.
And now we'll...
Hard-boiled eggs, cooked fresh this morning, roast beef sandwiches.
I'll have a hard-boiled egg.
Here you are. Thank you.
And now we'll...
May I have a paper napkin, please?
Yes, ma'am. Here you are. Thank you.
And now we'll...
Will you have a sandwich, Mr. Day?
Yes, please.
Here you are.
I'll have to re-educate this kid. He got his food free in the Navy. And now we'll go...
Last call for sandwiches, hard-boiled eggs, and Coca-Cola. Eggs and Coca-Cola! Eggs and Coca-Cola!
It was in March of 1948. We were doing a thing where Jack borrowed Ronald Coleman's Oscar.
Writer Milt Josephsberg.
And to show it to Rochester, and... The idea of this, we had a running thing for like 6 weeks where Jack would be robbed of the Oscar. And then to give Ronald Coleman his Oscar, he would borrow Bing Crosby's Oscar. Then he would be short an Oscar and would borrow Paul Lucas, who won an Oscar for, I don't remember.
Watch on the Rhine.
One of those pictures. But he would always be one Oscar behind, and this way we would always have the guest star, a full guest star, and then the following week when Jack returned the Oscar, he would have that person on for a couple of seconds, a vignette cameo appearance. I don't remember what happened with that, and nobody remembers what happened. But John Tackerberry and I had to write the thing where he came home and was robbed of the Oscar. And incidentally, this joke became, in Jack's obituary in Time magazine, they ran Your Money or Your Life, long pause, burglar, Your Money or Your Life, Jack Benny, I'm Thinking It Over. Jean Kerr wrote an article, she's the authoress, playwright, I think for the Saturday Evening Post, in which she said that only three great jokes can she remember from radio, and this was one of them. And it has been called the most famous joke in the history of broadcast, and it came about accidentally. Because Tackerberry and I had to write this, and now we had the thing with the burglar, the crook, who was played by a man named Eddie Marr, and he was supposed to hold Jack up. And now we're writing, and writers are very different people. I would be a pacer at times. John Tackerberry used to relax and half doze off on the couch, you know what I mean, until we had something and he'd snap too. And I said, we can't just say, okay, stick him up. I said, we got to get something real exciting. And suddenly I said, hey, I've got a line that I know is going to be funny, and it's the most obvious line. It's the cliche line. It's the classic line of all time. We just have the crook say, your money or your life, and have Jack stare at the audience, and we know there's going to be a laugh. And he says, yeah. I said, but we cannot give it. It must have the greatest answer in the world. And Tackerberry is relaxing. He says, yeah, yeah. And now I'm pacing. I'm throwing a lot of lines, and I keep saying, your money or your life, and I'll throw the punchline, your money or your life. And I had one of them that wasn't bad, your money or your life, and Jack says, you mean I have a choice? Which, but I said, it's got to be better than that. And now I begin to get mad at Tackerberry, who I think is half asleep. And I said, come on, Tack, your money or your life? Your money or your life? Come on, will you? There must be something in that. Your money or your life? And very angrily he says, I'm thinking it over. And I fell down and he jumped up and we said, that's it. And that is how the joke came into being. Mm-hmm. It was accidental.
Ronnie, is that your Oscar on the table with the floodlights on it?
Yes.
Say, do you mind if I look at it?
Well,
gosh, it's really beautiful. You know, Rochester, my butler, has never seen an Oscar. Would it be all right if I borrowed it for a little while?
Well, all right, Jack. Go ahead and take it.
Gee, thanks.
Darling, why did you agree to let him take the Oscar home?
Might as well be with the rest of my things.
What did you say?
Oh, nothing, nothing.
Oh. Well, Ronnie, it's awfully nice of you. Thanks a lot. I'll just wrap the Oscar in this copy of tonight's newspaper. I haven't read it yet. There we are. Well, good night.
Good night.
Gee, it was nice of him to let me take the Oscar so I could show it to Rochester. I must have stayed there longer than I thought. So dark out. No moon. Oh, well. Hello, kitty. Hey, kitty, 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 kitty. Darn it, she got away. She'd have made a wonderful A string.
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Huh?
Got a match?
Match? Yes, I have one right here.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
What?
You heard me.
Mister. Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? Look, Bud. I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
Now, mister...
Shut up and give me your wallet. And I'll take that package you're holding, too.
No, no, mister, don't take that package. It's mine. It belongs to Ronald Coleman.
Shut up.
But, mister, please.
Hey, this looks like gold. I'll melt it down.
But it isn't mine. I have to return it.
Pipe down. And lay down on the sidewalk, face down, and count to 100.
Look, mister, can't reach...
Go on. Don't make a move or I'll let you have it.
Okay, okay.
Down on your face and start counting.
Yes, sir. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... 8, 9, 10. Go away, kitty. 11, 12, 13, 14. Kitty, stop licking my face. I got enough trouble. 15, 16, 17, 18. Kitty, go away from here. 19, 20. What'll I tell Ronnie? 21, 22, 23, 24.
The money or your life, joke, which was a very good joke, got a very big laugh and got a lot of publicity because at that time, by coincidence, we had on our show as a guest a radio columnist, John Crosby. Mm-hmm. This goes way back. And the Money or Your Life joke happened on that show, and he kind of fell in love with it, and for quite a while, ever so often, would refer back to that joke, and it got a lot of publicity. So people began to believe that that was the biggest laugh Jack ever got. Then Jack corrected that, and the biggest laugh we ever got was at a time when Dorothy Kirsten, the opera singer, was playing Los Angeles, supposedly. I guess she really was. And our cast went down to see her in our story. And the next day when she appeared on our show as a guest... Then they got into a conversation that led into a situation that let Mary get this big laugh using only two words, three words, actually. That's all she had.
Dorothy Kirsten? You don't mean Dorothy Kirsten of the Metropolitan Opera?
Yes, Mr. Benny, and here I am.
Well, Miss Kirsten, this is indeed an honor and a great privilege having an operatic star like you on my program.
Thank you, Mr. Benny. Coming from a violinist of your reputation, I consider that quite a compliment.
Well, speaking of my violin playing, I really shouldn't take too much credit for a talent that comes naturally.
Some talent. Your father used to tie a flat iron on the end of your bow so you could practice the violin and press pants at the same time.
Mary, please. Oh, Miss Kirsten, this is Mary Livingston.
How do you do, Miss Livingston?
How do you do?
And this is Dennis Day.
Hello, Dennis.
Glad to know you, Miss Kirsten.
Dennis, you must be very proud to be associated with a man of Mr. Benny's stature and importance.
In a bathing suit, he looks like a spider.
Mr. Day. He's such a kid, you know?
Oh, Miss Kirsten, I wanted to tell you that I saw you in Madame Butterfly Wednesday afternoon, and I thought your performance was simply magnificent.
Well, thanks. Thanks awfully. It's an awfully nice and kind of you, Mr. Wilson. But who could help singing Puccini? It's so expressive, and particularly in the last act, starting with the Allegro Vivacissimo.
Well, now, that's being very modest, Miss Kirsten, but not every singer has the necessary bel canto and flexibility or range to cope with the high tessitura of the first act.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. And don't you think that in the aria Un bel di vedremo that the strings played the con molto passione exceptionally fine and with great sostenendo?
Well, I thought...
Oh, shut up! Not cricket.
Now, that was the kind of a laugh that I'm sure Jack could have milked it for another 2 minutes if he had wanted to, because all the ingredients were there. Here he was, this poor man, just dying to get into a musical conversation. And the minute he opened his mouth and just said, well, I thought, and Mary says, oh, shut up. He stood there and he looked at the audience, just kind of pleading for help. In fact, I was only trying to help, but it had everything going for it.
What is it, Geitschild?
Mr. Benny's line is flashing.
Yeah, I wonder what Sparkle Plenty wants now.
I'll plug in and find out. Hello? Yes, sir, I'll call you right back. He wants I should get him Mary Livingston. Mabel, have you noticed how much Mr. Benny has changed? In the last few months, he's gotten awfully gray at the temples.
His hair...
No, his skin.
Well, I didn't notice that, but there are lots of other changes in him.
Give a for instance.
Well, he's so hammy. He says when he was at the Palladium in London, he was the greatest thing that ever happened to England.
No.
Yes. He says he's so popular that he expects Princess Elizabeth to call her baby boy Jack Mountbatten Benny. What? Of Edinburgh yet. Better pull out your plug. Mr. Benny might be listening.
Who cares? I've got a new sweetie pie. Phil Harris's guitar player, Frankie Remley.
Why, Gertrude Gearshift. I didn't even know anything was cooking among you two.
Oh, yeah. I had a date with Frankie again last night. He drove up on Mulholland Drive, parked the car, gave a big sigh, and then laid his head on my shoulder.
My, how romantic.
Romantic nothing. He was out cold.
I can't understand you. How can you go for a guy like Remley when Phil Harris is around?
Ah, Phil Harris. Take away his personality.
quality, his smile, and his wavy hair, and what do you got? I don't know, kid, but throw me the left elbow.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are two telephone operators on my program whom you've enjoyed many times. B. Benaderet, who plays the part of Gertrude, and Sarah Byrne, who plays the part of Mabel.
Well, Jack, I don't see the girls around.
You don't? Well, then maybe they're still at the switchboard. I'll pick up the phone and find out.
Oh, Mabel, what is a guy chill? Mr. Benny's line is flashing.
Yeah, I wonder what Judy Splinters wants now.
Shall I answer it and find out?
Let him wait. I had a date with him last week to go to the movies, and he kept me waiting for 2 hours. I'd have gotten awfully tired if I wasn't sitting down.
Sitting down?
Yeah. When Mr. Benny takes you to the movies, he meets you inside.
I know what you mean. He's a slick one. Once he took me up on Mulholland Drive, shut off the motor, and then he said, "You know, honey, my back itches. Would you mind rubbing it for me?" So, then he said, "I want to take my shirt off. Would you mind closing your eyes?"
All right, so you closed your eyes and rubbed his back.
Rubbed his back, nothing. When I got through, I found